I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica Radio.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. El Distrito Colombia here on this Friday, March 28th, 2025. We're also heard on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on the Afro-descendant community in Central America following the death this month of Garifuna musician Aurelio Martinez, who died in a plane crash along with 12 others just off the coast of Honduras this month. As a Garifuna, he was the preeminent voice and musical ambassador of a genre of music called punta. In addition, he briefly became the first person of Afro descent to hold public office in the Honduran National Assembly. Needless to say, he had a rich and full life, and there's a lot to discuss here, which is why we have our guest today on the show. We have Jose Francisco Avila, who's the chairman of the board of the Garifuna Coalition USA, based in New York. He's also the author of Garifuna Ancestry, the DNA quest to decipher the Garifuna distant past. Welcome back to the show, Jose Francisco Avila.
Thank you, Oscar. It's a pleasure to be talking to you and to your audience in this special location for the Garifuna community. Every time that we've done has been under different circumstances, but such is life. A pleasure to be here with you.
Yes, and you're right. I wish we could have this discussion under better circumstances. But Jose, oftentimes when someone of this magnitude passes away, of course, I'm referring to Aurelio Martinez. Many programs here on WPFW look to celebrate that person's life rather than to mourn their death. Sometimes it is easier said than done, especially yes. When Aurelio Martinez did so much in his life. So let's begin by telling the audience who was Aurelio Martinez and the music called punta, for which many people have pointed to him as the ambassador.
Absolutely, Oscar. I describe Aurelio Martinez as a singer, a guitarist, composer, and percussionist. He was all of that, in addition to a great singer. Aurelio was truly a virtuoso. He played just about every instrument. But what was really amazing about Aurelio is his beginning. Aurelio was born in one of the smallest Garifuna villages in Honduras called La Playa, in one of the poorest sections of Honduras. It's right around La Mosquitia, what some people call the Mosquito Coast, and it's the most remote area of Honduras, basically bordering Nicaragua. That's where Aurelio was born. And interestingly enough, that's where he also started his music career. Reading his bio and talking to him personally about his career, he basically started playing the guitar at six. because his father was a guitar player and his mother had talent as a singer and so forth. So he grew up in a musically talented family, and again, very young. And then around the age of 14, his parents transfer him to the city of La Ceiba, which is the third most important city in Honduras. Tegucigalpa, which is the capital, is the most important. San Pedro Sula, which is considered the industrial capital of Honduras, is the second. La Ceiba is the third. That was really where the banana companies were operating, so that established it as a commercial. So they sent him there. And I did an interview with him for a tribute that we did for him in 2015. And that's where he shared all this information. And he shared with me that the reason they transferred him to La Ceiba was for his education, to get educated. Because at that time, there were really no schools in La Playa, that whole section of Honduras. So that's why they sent him to La Ceiba in Honduras. And that's where he went to school. That's where he grew up. So that's just a small part, and I'll give you more details. But that's the beginning of the person that became the most important, the most prominent, not just Garifuna artist, but Afro descendant from Central America.
Thank you for pointing out that you did have a personal relationship with Aurelio Martinez, and that makes this conversation with you even more precious, to have somebody, a fellow Garifuna, to tell his story considering these circumstances right now. So I wonder if you could tell us about the significance of Aurelio becoming the first Garifuna to be elected to the country's National Congress in 2005. We've had you on the show before, and we've spoken extensively in the past about the Garifuna history, both in Honduras and in New York, which has one of the largest Garifuna communities in the United States. And so I would encourage everyone to check out those previous episodes on latinomediacollective.com if you want to learn more about Garifuna history, both in Honduras and in New York as well. But considering that it wasn't until 2005 that there was any Garifuna voice in Honduras National Congress is astounding, considering all the things that we've discussed previously in the past of how so many things are stacked against Garifuna for any voice in Congress or any voice at all in the Honduran national landscape.
Absolutely. What we're talking about now is how flexible, how diverse Aurelio was as a person. Aurelio already had a very successful music career. As I mentioned, he transferred to La Ceiba and for school, but that's when he started also playing professionally, was in the city of La Ceiba. So by 2005, he has a very successful career. He had recorded his first album, a CD, which in 1994 would actually place them at the international level with a tour through Japan. So he had done all of that. And then I still remember, as I said, I have a personal relationship with him. And I remember talking to him when he was planning, during one of his visits to New York, planning to run for Congress. And I asked him, so why do you want to do it? And he said, well, because it's been too long that we have not had any representation. I must also say that in addition to being all what I just mentioned, he was a social justice advocate. And he said to me, it's been so long, but the way the country runs, he said, it will take either a soccer player or an artist like me to stand a chance to be elected. That was in 2005. He actually ran with the Liberal Party of Honduras. And sure enough, he became, actually, he was the first one, but he also was a part of a group of five, which for the first time, the Garifuna had that much representation in the Honduran Congress. But he was the most prominent of all the five that were elected at that time. And Oscar, what that reflects is really the conditions of the Garifuna community in Honduras up to that point. There's no question that as Afro-descendants, Afro-indigenous group, things were not different for us than they were for African descendants around the world. So again, Aurelio was sort of a generation that broke through all of that. as an artist, which also allowed him to now explore the possibilities of running for Congress. And he won it, and he was elected, one of the first ones in over, by that time, we had been in Honduras for over 150 years, and he got elected.
Astounding, 150 years, and it wasn't until 2005 that there was a Garifuna voice in the National Congress. And because of that, I would encourage everyone to go back to the archives of the LatinoMediaCollective.com, because in 2020, at the height of the Black Lives Matter movement, I had the honor to speak with a former member of OFRANE, which is the largest Afro-Honduran organization in Honduras. And I got the opportunity to speak with Gregoria Flores, who is also based in New York, and really described in detail about how much things are stacked politically against Afro descendants in Honduras. So there's a lot more to be discussed there. And I encourage everyone to go check out that episode, along with the ones that we did with Jose Francisco Avila in the past. So in the interest of full disclosure, we are recording this interview 4 days after Aurelio's passing. And 2 days after his death, the Fox affiliate WVUE in New Orleans did a report that also highlighted the city's Honduran community in New Orleans. So let's take a listen.
Tuesday night, the sounds of the tambor filled this backyard in Gentilly. Dozens of people danced and sang as a celebration of life for Aurelio Martinez, a Garifuna musician and Honduran icon who was among the 12 killed in a plane crash Monday night when their flight crashed into the sea off of an island near mainland Honduras shortly after takeoff. The Honduran government is investigating the exact cause of the crash, while Martinez's son, who lives in New Orleans, grieves with loved ones.
It's been such a hard time for me. It was a short time before when we actually spoke. Everything was good, and in just a moment, that all changed. It's been so hard, so difficult.
Joel Martinez says his father was supposed to land in New Orleans on Wednesday, prepping to perform in the area. Now he struggles to describe his loss.
He was my friend, my confidant. He was someone who inspired me so much.
Martinez spent decades traveling the world, sharing his Garifuna and Honduran culture with fans. Joel says tributes like the one Tuesday night have been going on all week.
The Garifuna community lost a great son. The people of Honduras lost an incredible friend.
Martinez's cousin, Leticia Casildo, runs Familias Unidas en Acción, an immigration rights group in New Orleans that Martinez helped manage. She now has a small museum set up in the office where clients and their children are able to learn about Martinez's life and culture.
He was so multifaceted.
From his more traditional folk instruments to his beloved guitar, Leticia says she wants to continue gathering her cousin's items in the hopes that a permanent display in a local museum will honor Martinez's legacy.
I'm confident that with Joel, myself, and with other people remembering him, he will never be forgotten.
Reporting in New Orleans, Andres Fuentes, Fox 8, Local First.
Martinez was supposed to perform at the Miss Garifuna Beauty Pageant next month at UNO. Now his loved ones want to have a tribute concert with Honduran musicians from across the world to play in his honor.
So that was the Fox affiliate WVUE in New Orleans, which we have to give credit where credit is due there for doing a fantastic report that not only describes the grief that Aurelio Martinez's family is going through right now, but also highlighted the fact that there is a very large, if not the largest, Honduran community, or one of the largest, in New Orleans. There's a lot to unpack from that clip that we just heard, but can you tell us about the Garifuna community in New Orleans and how it perhaps runs parallel with the history of African influence music in that part of the country? Because we heard a little bit in the background during that report. It may not be similar to the Creole music that we know in New Orleans, but it comes very close a little bit.
Absolutely. That was great reporting that was done, and I was glad to hear Aurelio's son, and he is right. We lost an icon. We lost a leader in every respect beyond music. But to talk about New Orleans briefly, Oscar, it goes back to the history of Honduras as a country. Honduras is what was originally called the Banana Republic. That was where the Standard Fruit Company, the United Fruit Companies, had operations. I mentioned before, La Ceiba was sort of the center of that business. Most of that business around the bananas was with New Orleans. As a matter of fact, the founder of the Standard Fruit Company was based in New Orleans. The United Fruit Company was based in Boston, but the Standard Fruit Company was actually based right there. So that I mentioned that because that contributed to the migration of the Garifunas to New Orleans, just like it did to New York, mostly as merchant marines working for the ships owned by these American companies. So that was, again, Garifunas worked for the Standard Fruit Companies. I remember as a child, so again, city of La Ceiba, where I grew up, and I remember that the railroad, they had railroad cars that will go from La Ceiba to the Garifuna villages around La Ceiba, Corozal and Sambo Creek, and they will come back loaded with Garifuna men to load the banana boxes into the ships for exportation to be exported to the United States. That same opportunity was what also gave the Garifunas the opportunity to migrate into New Orleans. And I remember reading an article where this happened right around late 1930s, late 1940s, was when the community started migrating there. Today is one of the most vibrant, one of the fastest growing Garifuna communities in the United States, the U.S. diaspora. New York, of course, has the largest Garifuna diaspora outside of Central America, but New Orleans has played a role. You mentioned Cajun music.
Yes.
New Orleans is one of the proudest city of its culture, Cajun, Black, and so forth. And there's a lot of similarity with Garifuna music. And again, because through migration and so forth, of course, there's been a lot of intermixing of Garifuna marrying people from New Orleans and so forth. But at the same time, as it was mentioned, this organization, and I'm glad to hear of the museum, and I'm glad to hear. And the son mentioned it, and the cousin, Oscar, I've been following it on Facebook, the fact that Aurelio was going to be there on April the 5th. He was to perform there. I also read a report that he was in Chicago, and supposedly he was going to fly from Chicago directly to New Orleans. Instead, he stopped in Honduras, and that's what, you know, what happened. But again, there is so much history, that even a history in New Orleans. There's a document, I can't remember the exact title of it, but it was published by one of the institutions there, which is actually the history of Garifuna music in New Orleans and relating it to the history. I also found information that one of the universities there was actually developing a curriculum to teach Garifuna in the school system of New Orleans. So that's a reflection, again, the evolution of migration and so forth to now one of the largest Garifuna settlements, let's say, in the world, right there in the city of New Orleans. NOLA, as a lot of people call it.
Yeah, that's an interesting story because the last time we had you in the show, we spoke almost exclusively on the Garifuna community in New York. And yes, while the one in New York may be the biggest population-wise, it seems like the one with the most influence culturally is in New Orleans. And it makes a lot of sense considering all the African and Haitian influences that exist already in the music scene in New Orleans. It's almost a perfect fit if you think about it. Now, another thing that came up from that clip that we heard was one thing, it was in English. It's astounding to me that there was even a TV news station in English, in the United States, in New Orleans of all places, doing a report on this musician. Because if you Google Aurelio Martinez right now, it's equal parts in English and in Spanish.
Yes.
The reports of his passing and all the tributes have come out since then. And quite a lot of it is coming from the Caribbean. but not just the Caribbean, also extends to the Garifuna community outside of Honduras, from Belize all the way down to Costa Rica and everywhere in between. So what do you make of the news coverage so far of both English and Spanish recognizing Aurelio's legacy here?
Oscar, it's impressive. I was telling my wife, I have a Google alert for Garifuna, just about every, and on a daily basis, even on a weekly basis, the most I get is 3 or 4, and it's one by one, or sometimes I get 4, but it's sort of a combination. My Google alert has not stopped with all different media reporting about Aurelio. CBS, Rolling Stone magazine, People in Español, and on and on. And that's a reflection of the man. That's a reflection of an iconic figure. I consider Aurelio, for context, I tell the story that my first Afro-descendant idol was Bob Marley. And it was because, yes, it was the African-American community here, but to me, Bob Marley was the first Black person that I could identify because he was from Jamaica and I was from Honduras. And it's like, hey, if he can make it, that's how I see Aurelio at this point, at that level, especially for the Garifuna community. I have seen his influence, how he has influenced Garifuna music, how he has preserved traditional Garifuna music, but at the same time, how innovative he has been in modernizing Garifuna music. But yes, as far as the media, I am happy. I am really impressed of all the coverage that I've seen. Again, the Google alerts, but reading the different articles. I mean, usually it's the Honduran newspapers were the only ones that will cover him. And Oscar, it's a good opportunity to tell you, to share this with you. Again, the personal relationship that I mentioned to you before we went online, that in March 14, 2015, we here in New York organized a tribute to Aurelio's 30th anniversary of his musical career. And we had conversations. And I was telling my wife, the reason that tribute, I was the executive director, and the reason we worked was because I had a conversation with Aurelio where he told me the following. I feel that my Garifuna people don't value what I've done for the culture. But at the same time, I feel that Honduras, the country where I was born, has not recognized my contributions to the country globally. And I said to him, well, what would you like to do? And he said, well, you know, he suggested we work together, and we were able to rent. It's called Hostos Center for the Arts and Culture. It's a theater with about capacity for about 1,000 people. It was a sold out concert that we were able to have. But it was because, again, he didn't feel that he was recognized. And we have gone from that to, again, Rolling Stone, People in Español covering his death. And again, it's a reflection of the development of the man as a person, and more importantly, as an artist over the years.
Profoundly. And you're right. The outpouring of tributes by national publications like NPR, CNN, ABC, yeah, The Guardian, Rolling Stone magazine. I actually did some of my research based on those articles, and I was not expecting those major publications to do something on Aurelio Martinez. But to my surprise, to my pleasant surprise, they did it. And some publications like Rolling Stone magazine did a particularly good job. And we'll talk about more details of that, which they presented as well in the second half of the show. We're going to take a break right here. We're speaking with Jose Francisco Avila, who's the chairman of the board of the Garifuna Coalition based in New York. He's also the author of Garifuna Ancestry, The DNA Quest to Decipher the Garifuna Distant Past. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned. Mutu Arabo.
negre mutu arabo ari gabana ya namule luana lalu tuna kuda baga ari gabana ya hinabule luana lalu tuna kuda baga maniga na uyala dire Anyagira mutu arabo oh, Maniga na uyala dine Anyagira mutu arabo Kasame hebe ya Disi wachare Kaba mesa waluba kambeka ilu wanyaka Kasame hebe ya Disi wachare Kaba mesa waluba kambeka ilu wanyaka Maniga na uyala dine
Of course, that was Aurelio Martinez singing Landini, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. Reminding everyone that you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and we're doing this episode in tribute to Aurelio Martinez, the Garifuna musician and ambassador of Punta Music from Honduras. And we're joined again with Jose Francisco Avila, who's the chairman of the board of the Garifuna Coalition USA, based in New York, and the author of Garifuna Ancestry, the DNA Quest to Decipher the Garifuna Distant Past. So, Jose, I want to go back to the clip that we heard in the first half of the show from New Orleans. One of the things that Aurelio Martinez's relatives pointed out in there was his political activism, not only in Honduras, but in New Orleans as well. And since you knew him personally, I want to know if you could speak a little bit more about that, because while his music may not have always been political per se, sometimes your very existence and your very identity is political, which is probably one of the reasons, one of several reasons, why he inspired so many people through his music. So I wonder if you could expand on this, because I think it's worth mentioning, because as we've had this conversation in the past, one of the most important things in preserving Garifuna history is the preservation of history through oral history. And certainly as a musician, Aurelio did plenty of that during the course of his life.
Yes, Oscar, absolutely. Aurelio was definitely an oral historian. And one of the talents that he had, I mentioned it before, but I'm going to expand a little bit when I say that he was so talented that he was able to preserve the traditional Garifuna music and at the same time innovate and improvise with Garifuna music. Yes, he was an activist. I mentioned before when I talk about his being elected to Congress, he understood his prominence, but unlike other people, he did not just dwell on it for himself. He saw that he could use his prominence to help the Garifuna communities. And I have to tie this, to put all the pieces together, to tie it. Aurelio started playing again with his family. Then he went to La Ceiba. He joined traditional Latino bands that were playing salsa and so forth. He did that. And then he created his own group, Lita Arira. Lita Arira, which means the blood of the rooster in the Garifuna language, he created that group, and it was very traditional. It was the traditional music, instrumentation for Garifuna music, traditional Garifuna music, two drums, a bass and a tenor, and then the maracas and conch cover, that they call it, where, you know, sort of those.
Oh, yeah.
That's a traditional Garifuna group. And that's the way Lita Arira was. And as a matter of fact, I still remember their performances were sort of a reflection of the traditional Garifuna man or black man, all shirtless and, you know, like working in the fields. That was sort of the outfit that they used. So he went from that to actually joining Caribbean bands like Los Gatos Bravos. Los Gatos Bravos was one of the most, they're still around, one of the most prominent groups that has passed from different generations. And Aurelio joined them at a very young age. I think he was 19 or 20. The most prominent Honduran group. And this group is significant because this group is also the first Honduran group that starts playing punta music. And Oscar, right here, I need to make a distinction. Remember I mentioned how innovative he is, and he was in innovating, but at the same time preserving it. Now, punta is a traditional garifuna rhythm. And as a matter of fact, it's considered a semi-sacred garifuna rhythm that is played usually in wakes. Now, in the 80s, in the late 70s and early 80s, garifuna youth, specifically in Belize, a man by the name of Pen Cayetano, added the guitar and electronics and sort of fastened the pace of punta, and that became known as punta rock. And that's what Aurelio and Andy Palacio grew up listening to and playing. Punta rock is what I describe as the first modern or popular garifuna music genre. Prior to that, everything was traditional. So Aurelio was able to do both. And again, the Gato, going back to Los Gatos Bravos of Honduras, they were playing punta, but now the new version, which was, again, electronics and so forth, and they become one of the most prominent groups. We go from Honduras music being traditional Latino music, you know, folkloric and so forth, to now punta, a garifuna rhythm, becoming the national rhythm of Honduras. So that's when Aurelio comes in, and he's got this combination. But he goes from there to actually work with one of the biggest producers of world music, Iván Durán, in Belize, who had produced Andy Palacio. And Andy, I still remember when Andy and Aurelio met. They met in the city of La Ceiba once again. I was there. And the reason that I was there, and the reason I remember it was because the reason we were in La Ceiba, it was to celebrate the 200th anniversary of the arrival of the Garifuna to Honduras. And so we were there at the municipal building, and that's when Andy and Aurelio met. Andy was already being produced by Iván Durán, again, the world music expert and so forth. They start talking, they become friends. And Andy eventually invites Aurelio to Belize, introduces Aurelio to Iván Durán, and Iván is just blown away with Aurelio's talent. And as a result of this, in 2004, Aurelio records his first world music album. I have it right here. It was called Garifuna Soul. Now, here's another example of how innovative Aurelio is. What is Garifuna Soul? Is now what Iván is promoting. Stone Tree is the name of the company. What they're promoting is not punta, but they are promoting paranda. And what is paranda? Paranda is one of the garifuna genres. And really, the story goes that paranda, as a matter of fact, we can Google, and I did the Google, and typically you'll find, whenever you find it, it's paranda, double R. The garifuna is paranda, one R. So the way I explain it, Oscar, is because since Spanish was not our original language, we had to learn it. We had difficulty rolling the R's, and it became paranda. But paranda becomes now also the second popular garifuna music among the youth. And this is what's being promoted at WOMEX and so forth. And Aurelio becomes part of that. And again, his album, Garifuna Soul, and that album is actually in 2005, Afropop Worldwide selects Aurelio as the newcomer of the year, and his album, Garifuna Soul, among the top 10 best albums of 2004. Again, the flexibility, his creativity, his ability to preserve, but at the same time, modernize garifuna music.
It's interesting that you mentioned Andy Palacio, because before we started recording this conversation, you brought it to my attention that this month is Garifuna Heritage Month,
yes,
which makes the circumstances of Aurelio's death ironic and tragic. But again, we're not here necessarily to mourn, but also to celebrate his life. And it's interesting that you mentioned Ivan Duran as well, because I think I could do a 1 hour conversation about his interesting story, because as you mentioned, he's a Belizean producer and he has helped promote Belizean music or Garifuna music in places that people may not even notice. So for example, he's done promotional music work for promoting the 2014 World Cup in Brazil, which gives you an idea of how this music has spread without people even noticing it. You know what I'm saying? But you mentioned Andy Palacio. And for those who may not know, can you give us more detail about who he was? Because the story is that Aurelio Martinez actually picked up where Andy Palacio left off. And much like Aurelio Martinez, Andy Palacio passed away before his time as well. So yes, give us more details about him, if you could.
Sure. Andy Palacio, I mentioned I had the pleasure of meeting him. Andy Palacio is what I consider the first Garifuna superstar. And Andy Palacio becomes a superstar by playing punto rock music that I mentioned before. This is now the popular among the youth. Just what happened in Honduras happened in Belize. Andy Palacio becomes so big that in Belize, with the fact that Belize is the only Central American country where Spanish is not the official language, English is, because they were a British colony, right?
Correct.
And Andy Palacio starts recording in Garifuna, becomes the biggest star. And not only that, Andy Palacio makes punta, specifically punta rock, the national music of Belize. And he's traveling all over. But one of the characteristics of Andy was that while he was doing this, he starts getting concerned about the loss of the Garifuna language. Andy Palacio was a teacher in Belize. And he starts noticing the fact that, again, the Garifuna language is practically dying out among the youth. He becomes so concerned that he takes a sabbatical from his work as a teacher in Belize and travels to Nicaragua. And why Nicaragua? Because he found out that in Nicaragua, the Garifuna language was practically lost. And he decides that he wants to do something about it. So he travels out there, starts organizing Garifuna lesson classes and so forth. And eventually he continues with his music business, and he continues to perform. But he uses that platform to start promoting the preservation of the Garifuna culture, specifically emphasizing the Garifuna language. As a matter of fact, I remember reading an article in a magazine, and the title of that article is "Making It Cool to Be Garifuna." That was Andy's mantra. That was what he was promoting. And eventually he goes from all of that to he becomes one of the key actors in UNESCO in 2001, proclaiming Garifuna music, language, and dance as one of the masterpieces of the oral and intangible heritage of humanity. 2001 was the first time that UNESCO presented this, and 19 cultures were selected, the Garifuna cult, and Andy plays a key role in that. And again, he's still playing. And the reason that music and dance were included, again, because of his influence, he realizes that the best way to attract the youth specifically to the language was through music. Oscar, it becomes a watershed moment in the preservation of the Garifuna language. More Garifuna, right here in New York, back in those days, I tell the story, one of the most popular groups ever here, Garifuna Youth, was called Garifuna Kids. I mean, they were on TV and everything. But again, it was the influence of Andy Palacio and so forth. Andy eventually becomes a minister in the government of Honduras and education and so forth. And he traveled all over the world. And again, during that time, as I mentioned before, in 1997, he meets Aurelio in La Ceiba. And so they become best of friends. He brings him over to Belize and so forth, start recording together. And that's the beginning of Aurelio in world music, again, with Ivan Dudan and so forth. So Andy is very influential, not just in the music, but again, he's really one of the protagonists of the preservation of the Garifuna culture.
As I said earlier, that while Aurelio's music may not have been political in lyrics per se, sometimes your existence and your identity can be political. And I think we can apply that to Andy Palacio as well, because let's be honest, you know, you and me speaking English right now, and the fact that we come from Spanish-speaking countries, those are colonial languages.
Yes.
And the fact that the Garifuna language is dying out, as you described it, shows you that the legacy of colonialism is not something that's necessarily in the past tense, so long as this type of language is dying out, as you described it. And people like Andy Palacio and Aurelio Martinez recognize it, as you said, and fought the good fight to the best of their abilities to maintain their identity and their culture. And that alone can be profoundly political. And so Absolutely. I'm glad that you mentioned that story, because, you know, one of the things that a lot of Afro descendants have told me throughout the years, throughout various parts of Latin America, is the importance of oral history and how oral history picks up where the state fails when it comes to the preservation of history and the preservation of memory as well. So we have to have more discussions about that with regards to the Garifuna language. So as you said, you had a personal relationship with Aurelio Martinez, and in our email correspondence before we started this conversation, you pointed out to me that he was in New York several years ago and performed in New York City. What was the reception by the audience, and what are your memories, your favorite memories from that time, from the last time he performed over in New York?
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, so we go to Honduras in 1997 for the celebration of the bicentennial. Oh, 1998 is when I moved to New York. And one of the first concerts that I attend in New York is at Lincoln Center, the outdoors theater. And who is it? Aurelio Martinez and Titi Men Flores from Belize. The first time that a Garifuna artist has played in that stage. In 2010, I attended a performance by Aurelio at Carnegie Hall. And he's been here.
Wow.
Yes, Carnegie Hall. Very notorious. But that's, again, how far Aurelio went. And those are the performances that I remember. But also, I cannot forget that in 1997, when I was in Honduras, again, at that time, he was just expanding beyond Garifuna with the modern Garifuna music and so forth. And there was, you know, what they call a hole in the wall up there. And all of us would go there because it was Aurelio and his band. And it was like all night long, you know, nothing but music. But again, this is a lot of the pleasant experiences that I remember. And in mine, I cannot forget the tribute that we, again, produced for him here. I was talking to my wife that in attendance at that tribute were the people from Afropop Worldwide. They were there to present an award for Aurelio. And one of them, during intermission, we start talking, and he says to me, you know, I've seen Aurelio, and I know his talent and so forth, but I never seen this performance by Aurelio. This is amazing. And I was explaining to my wife that, again, and you kind of got that from what I mentioned, how diverse and flexible he was. And I said to her, and the reason what made it special was the fact that, again, conversation with him, right, is his tribute. He gave me a list of different artists, I think it was about 10, that he wanted each one of those artists to perform one of his songs. And the artist would choose what song. And we were able to get the guys to cooperate. We did that. But he also wanted to reflect, and again, I shared it indifferently. Aurelio's career path is really traditional Garifuna music, modern, popular, punta rock, and world music through Paranda, Womix, and so forth. So those are the three phases of music career. And he wanted all of that reflected. So what we did was, again, the first half of the tribute was the popular Honduras. This is really Honduras, which is Punta Rock. And the first album in Punta Rock was called Inocencia. Inocencia. And it was 10 different songs and so forth. And then, again, when he started with Stone Tree, this is world music, which is different as the guitar, the drumming, and so forth. So the second half was dedicated to world music. And it was to reflect his entire career, which is really what he wanted. And that's what the people at Afropop Worldwide were impressed about. And again, Oscar, and you and I, you just mentioned it, the fact that here we are talking in English, but we also talk Spanish. And what I discovered overall with Garifuna, not just Garifuna music, Garifuna history in general, is the fact that most of the stories are written by Anglophiles, American or British, and so forth from around the world. Very little comes from Honduras, where he was born and where he started. And I was able to find, in talking to him in Spanish and talking to him about his story and, you know, reading what had been published about, I was able to put his entire life into a story. And he was really pleased with that. But again, that's what I learned. But you also mentioned a few times the fact that he was a politician, he was a social justice. Many of his songs, there was a song that I just remember. The first song in the Inocencia album is in Garifuna. But that song, the lyrics of that song is really a complaint against cultural appropriation.
And really?
Yes, Oscar, yes. As a matter of fact, the chorus of that song says, look what they did. They took our culture and they messed it up. And he repeats that over and over. And you know what he was referring to there? It was the fact that the most successful song, Garifuna song, and history, and I think you will recognize the song, is called Sopa de Caracol.
Yes.
Sopa de Caracol is the most successful Garifuna song in history. But it became successful by Banda Blanca. The name tells you, right, that they were not Garifuna and they were not Afro descendants. But they, and this is a song, this is a song that was written by a Garifuna man from Belize, Chico Ramos, in the Garifuna language. I have the original song, you know, and I heard it over and over. Banda Blanca listens to it, they like it, and they record it in Spanish. Tonta, Watanegue Consul, Yupipati, Yupipaka. Sopa de Caracol, and it becomes the biggest. So that's what Aurelio is addressing in that song, is that cultural appropriation by a Banda Blanca of the Garifuna culture. Now, you know, I see debates in social media, some of them Hondureños saying, La Punta es Hondureña, no es Garifuna, no, Garifuna, no, it's Garifuna, and so forth. But yes, you're right. He was, as a matter of fact, he also wrote, in that album, there's a song that he wrote about HIV. And there's another song in one of his later. Yes. And it's basically a song when he's in the Garifuna language, he's giving advice to the youth to protect themselves, you know, and so forth. But there's also another song that he wrote, which is basically about the southern border of the United States. The fact, La Bestia, you know, that train.
Really?
That runs, yeah. Yeah. So, but and again, and this is a message. Yeah, there's another song that he wrote, and many of his songs really deal with the land issue. He refers to Garifuna land as our treasure, and that it should be protected. So, a lot of his songs actually revolve around that theme. But like you said before, he's an advocate. He's a. It's a matter of fact. Yes, yeah, now you got me going. There's also a song about when after he wrote this one after he left Congress. And it's actually, this one is a criticism of the politicians. And the chorus of that song goes something to the fact that, oh, don't believe, and they come every year with the lies. And then after they get elected, they don't take care of the people. But again, to your point that he was more than just an artist. He was really a politician. And hey, But I mentioned Bob Marley before, and just like them, there are many others, right? That artists are the ones that really deliver the message. And as you said before, it is a reflection of the fact of the, well, again, masterpiece of the oral and intangible heritage of humanity. And as you mentioned before, a significant part of that is the oral tradition, which Aurelio and Andy passed along.
Yeah, and a lot of those songs that you mentioned weren't in Spanish per se. We played Landini, you know, during the break, and that's certainly not in Spanish at all. And yeah, just to jump on what you just said, that, you know, oral history steps in when the state or the government fails to preserve history and memory. And unfortunately, with Aurelio no longer with us and Andy Palacio as well, because we have to give credit to him as well, our hope here is that the Garifuna youth of today understand both the importance of oral history, but also the modern means of communications to preserve this history that you and I have been discussing. Hopefully they'll be a lot more tech savvy than you and I as well.
Yes.
So in the last 2 minutes that we have left, what else do you hope people learn from Aurelio's legacy? What else do you hope people draw from Aurelio's legacy, his music, and his pursuit of expanding and preserving Garifuna culture during his lifetime, whether it be in music or in politics? What else do you hope people learn from his life?
Aurelio is a reflection of Garifuna resilience. I say that because, again, we are an Afro-Indigenous group that was banished from our homeland, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, in 1797 by the British. That's how we ended up in Honduras, Belize, Guatemala, Nicaragua, which is where the diaspora is. And despite all of that, according to history, the Garifunas are one of, if not the only group that was able to overcome colonialism and slavery. The way we arrived in St. Vincent, again, history says that a ship, there was a shipwreck, the slaves were saved, they mixed with the Arawak and the Caribbean Indian, and the combination of those is what created Garifuna. That's who we are. I mentioned that, Oscar, in tied to Aurelio, because what Aurelio represents is that Garifuna resilience, that a people that were banished from their country, but before they were banished, genocide was committed against them. Over 2,500 of my ancestors died in the island of Ballysol before the rest, the other half, was loaded into ships that left St. Vincent on March 11, 1797, and landed in Honduras on April 12, 1797. And again, that's really the path that Aurelio has traveled. And I mention all of that, so when I come with resilience, I say, what we reflect is the fact that despite displacement, despite genocide, despite everything that has been done against it, here we are. And I conclude by saying that proves that not only did we survive, we have thrived. And that's what Aurelio represents. And that's what I would like everyone to remember about the Garifuna people and about Aurelio. We are resilient people.
There's nothing else I can add that could be stronger than what you just said. So thank you for saying that. And I think that's an absolute great point to end this conversation in remembrance of Aurelio Martinez. So we've been speaking with Jose Francisco Avila, who's the chairman of the board of the Garifuna Coalition based in New York. He's also the author of Garifuna Ancestry, The DNA Quest to Decipher the Garifuna Distant Past. Jose Francisco Avila, it's been an honor. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for being on the show with us.
Same here. Oscar, thank you very much for the opportunity. I have enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone that you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. And we're going to end today's episode with another song from Aurelio Martinez called Tio Sam. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the show. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao. Darua nege pena luni me digo
Daruba negue pena, luni merigo. Caba honi de, honi familia. Caba honi de, honi familia.
For WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. A powerful earthquake struck Myanmar and neighboring Thailand today. The 7.7 magnitude quake, with an epicenter near Mandalay, Myanmar's second largest city, struck at midday and was followed by a strong 6.4 magnitude aftershock. The full extent of destruction was not immediately clear, particularly in Myanmar, one of the world's poorest countries. It is embroiled in a civil war, and information is tightly controlled. The head of Myanmar's military government said in a televised speech at least 144 people were reported dead, and the death toll is expected to rise. In Bangkok, at least 8 people were killed when a skyscraper that was under construction collapsed. Thailand's defense minister said rescuers were searching for over 90 people trapped in the rubble. In more news, the Trump administration asked the Supreme Court today to allow it to use a rarely invoked wartime law to continue to deport Venezuelans with little to no due process. The Justice Department made the request for emergency relief just days after an appeals court kept in place a temporary block on the president's ability to use the Alien Enemies Act to quickly deport the alleged members of a Venezuelan gang to a mega prison in El Salvador. The 1798 law does give presidents the authority to detain and deport foreign nationals from U.S. territory during a declared war or invasion. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, however, ruled that the invasion had to come from a foreign government rather than a gang. In other news, speaking yesterday at a press conference in Guyana, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said that the State Department has revoked more than 300 student visas, mostly over pro-Palestinian protests. Rubio also made it clear the crackdown is far from over, telling reporters, quote, "At some point, I hope we run out because we've gotten rid of all of them. But we're looking every day for those lunatics that are tearing things up," close quote. Just this week, Rumeysa Öztürk, a Turkish citizen who had a student visa for doctoral work at Tufts University, was detained by ICE agents and her visa was revoked. She has not been charged with any crime, but her arrest came a year after she co-authored an opinion piece in the Tufts Daily urging the university to take seriously a student government resolution calling on the school to divest from companies dealing with Israel and recognize genocide of Palestinians. And President Trump signed an executive order yesterday aimed at removing what he calls anti-American ideology from the Smithsonian Institution, including its museums, education and research centers, and the National Zoo. The order, titled Restoring Truth and Sanity to American History, states that, quote, "The Smithsonian Institution has, in recent years, come under the influence of a divisive, race-centered ideology," close quote, and directs Vice President Vance to oversee the elimination of what he finds improper and deny funding to exhibitions that, quote, "degrade shared American values," close quote. Trump's directive also calls on the Secretary of the Interior to restore statues and other monuments that have been, quote, "improperly removed or changed in the last 5 years," close quote, suggesting some parts of the U.S. could see the return of hundreds of Confederate monuments